We're going to go to item number 17, public comment in Elko.
There's no public comment from Elko.
Thank you. Reno?
No public comment in Reno.
Thank you. Henderson? If you could please state your name and spell it, please.
My name is Dr. Chantal, S-H-A-N-T-A-L, Marshall, M-A-R-S-H-A-L-L. I'm currently an assistant professor of social psychology here at Nevada State College, though thanks to the board's vote yesterday, I will be promoted to associate professor starting next year, so thank you.
Congratulations.
My expertise here at Nevada State College is in social inequality, especially based on race. And I want to thank the board and Chancellor Riley's office for the recent summit on student success and the upcoming follow-up focusing on achievement gaps. As you will hear from our president later today, NSC is witnessing amazing growth in our student enrollment. Once President Patterson announced that we may be proposing admissions changes to help us manage this, I jumped at the opportunity to be a part of the conversation and have joined the admissions policy work group. In that capacity, I'd like to urge the Board of Regents, as well as the Chancellor, to be wary of the idea that a simple GPA cutoff will be the solution that NSC needs. There is overwhelming evidence of racial, gender, social class, and other biases that are present in the educational system that are reflected in seemingly objective evaluations, such as grade point average. The social psychological research on the unequal treatment of students of various identities by teachers, either due to implicit or very obvious explicit biases, means that a blunt GPA cutoff would lead us to reinforce the inequalities that plague the students when they apply. There are also the systemic biases that students have little control over that affect their preparedness when they apply to college. Should we reject students simply because their schools had fewer resources to prepare them for college? As a faculty member in what I believe to be one of the best colleges serving diverse students, I think that goes against our mission. I urge the board to support more nuanced admissions policies that allow us to be leaders in the way that we educate diverse students and truly create equal opportunities for all of our students who envision themselves as college graduates. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Seeing no other public comment, we're going to close public comment, go to item number 18, MOU. Chancellor Riley.
Thank you, Chair Page and members of the board. This will be actually a joint presentation from President Solis, Zaragoza, and Patterson.
Thank you, Chancellor, members of the board. Vince Solis for the record. Members of the board, we have been in discussions with the system of education in the state of Tamaulipas, Mexico, which is in the northern part of Mexico, or the southern part of the U.S., depending on which side of the border you're on. Dr. Zaragoza and I, having been from Texas prior to, have done extensive work with the partners that we've had there before. And as we made our transitions to Nevada, one of the ideas, questions, thoughts that came up from the system there is that ENCHI as a system can provide different types of training, educational services to their folks simply because we have such a broad range of community colleges and universities. So we began working with Michael Flores and the Chancellor's office to have discussions. Those discussions led to some letters of intent to basically continue those discussions and the possibility of developing an MOU so that we can provide services, educational training, and educational opportunities to students in that part of their country. And there's a couple of items that we looked at least on our end at WNC, and my colleagues will speak to how this benefits their institutions as well. But for us, what this would do is the resources that come in from providing these kinds of trainings would allow us to purchase enhanced equipment in our mechatronics lab, which would lead to our entry goal in access so that we can take some of our opportunities on the road for the students here in Nevada. And it also helps with student success at WNC because we have this enhanced equipment. It allows us to teach students in the latest, greatest environments and also with the latest technologies. So at this time, our opportunities exist in the areas of mechatronics, English development. One of the things that they're very interested in, and just so that the board may be aware of this, is that they are converting many of their instructional programs to 100% English. So they are very interested in English language development. That is at the top of their list. followed by mechatronics and cybersecurity. The campuses there are anticipating and hopeful that this is approved by the board. One of the campuses sent a representative to Las Vegas last night, and they were visiting CSN. Their interest in that campus specifically is with cybersecurity. So if it pleases the board and the chancellor, I would also defer to my colleagues, Dr. Bart, President Bart and President Zaragoza, who may also have some other comments in terms of what they could possibly provide. And also, this would also be a system approach from the community college's side. The other part that's important is that this MOU also allows for discussions with the universities. Their main interest in that area would be cyber as well, and also renewable energies as a side conversation. So with that, I'm open for any questions, but I'm sure that President Bart and President Zaragoza may also have some other input.
Thank you. President Patterson, here from Nevada State College. This is a really interesting and great opportunity for Nevada State College, and right now we're focusing on our School of Education. For those of you who don't know, we have a really robust teaching English second language and English development, acquisition, faculty, and leadership within the School of Education. We require a TESOL endorsement of everyone that graduates in education to be able to work in the school district. So those are really important things that we already do. As you know, our teacher pipeline program, which I think Dr. Nauman is here or was here, and I've been leading that grant effort to get more students, particularly students of color, to choose teaching as a profession, go into the school district. So those are all things that are happening in the School of Education right now. So the conversations that we've had thus far with Tamaulipas faculty have been related to how can we assist them in understanding this way in which there can be this what we call ELAD, or English Language Acquisition Development and TESOL certification, that they can translate that into their work with their students. We're also looking at how we can do our technology endorsement in education with integration with English as a second language, which would be very helpful to what they're trying to accomplish. We've also looked at the idea of a bilingual education summer teaching institute here at the college. And then we're exploring concepts related to English for business purposes. And this follows earlier work that the college has done in Spanish immersion for nurses in Mexico, which is very another useful skill. So this is what we envision to be potentially a bilateral program. But right now this is focused on helping build the cultural experience and expertise of faculty and students coming to Nevada in order to participate in that program. So we're grateful for the opportunity, and we're excited about how this may expand out in the future. Thank you.
Federico Zaragoza, President of College of Southern Nevada. So I just want to echo some of the themes that you've already heard. Nationally for community colleges, international training and international services is the growing sector of a strategy to diversify funding sources for community colleges. So I know at Alamo Colleges, it was really that framework kind of that drove our engagement with the international community. And while we started with Mexico as well, that was a great experience at Alamo, because it gave us a foundation then to expand. But the opportunity that you've heard would at some point exceed just the work that we're doing in Mexico. At Alamo Colleges, we had a contract with all of Latin America, and also with India, very active. They want to replicate community colleges in India, so we were doing a lot of capacity building. But it gave us an opportunity really to highlight the resources that we had within the community college system. I'm more excited even than I was at Alamo to see the opportunity of having a one-stop approach to dealing with our international partners, because not only are we looking at the community college delivery system now you can infuse the research and the expanded components that we have within the universities as well. And I think that that's opening up a lot of discussion, even at Tamaulipas, and I think President Solís would agree that there was a lot of interest not only in the training part of it, but also the possibility of capacity building and research down the line. So this agreement, I think, codifies opportunities down the line to really be able to approach international education much more comprehensively. I want to commend Michael Flores for facilitating the discussion, and it really shows that you can have a systems approach that benefits kind of the individual community colleges. In our case, the role of the community college is just to deliver the service, but the whole idea of presenting a systems approach to what may be available in a one-stop system is pretty unique to Nevada, and I think it's going to serve as well as we move forward. So as President Solis mentioned, we have a guest, a team that's already looking at cybersecurity. They were here yesterday, they're here today. And so we will be hosting a contingent on the approval of the Memorandum of Agreement, our first Cyber Academy in April and in June. So we're looking at basically a boot camp model with contextual ESL that would, again, allow the instructors to go back and not only have the technical but also the contextual language component that's needed. And that's just tip of the iceberg. There are many other areas that we think this agreement is going to open in terms of discussion. Thank you.
President Solis.
Regent Page, members of the board, Chancellor, I also wanted to thank, and I would be remiss if I did not recognize the efforts of the Chancellor's office in helping make this work. Part of the discussions with our counterparts in Mexico is the relationship piece is extremely important, and I would be remiss if I didn't recognize the efforts of Mr. McKinnon, who spent a day and a half with the folks when they were here visiting, and I would also be remiss if I didn't recognize the efforts of Michael Flores, because he took time to go down to the border to meet with a much larger contingency of the folks. So now when I get the calls from the folks in Mexico, their first questions are, will Nate and Mike be at the meeting? So I want to thank the system for that support. That's really important. And we also couldn't have done this without our Chancellor's support as well. So it's been a real team effort. And I just wanted to echo that I think what's most attractive to the folks there, because they're already sending their students abroad. They're sending them to Minnesota, Arkansas. They're sending them to Canada. For them, what's really appealing about Nevada is the one-stop shop component between colleges and universities. And they've also got friends here that they've made. So they would like to send their work here. They're doing it already throughout the country, but I think Nevada, as we've discussed with the Chancellor, could be that one-stop shop, and it could also serve as our entry and foray into other opportunities throughout that country in other states for training, educational services, and opportunities that would help both entities. So I just wanted to thank the NTU folks for all the support on this, and also the regents for visiting and spending time with them the last time they were here.
Any questions? We're in motion. Do we have a second? Second from Regent Carter. And you have a question as well? So a question from Regent Carter, then Regent Hayes.
Then Regent Krajicek.
So I'm just thankful. You know, this is a great way to kind of test the waters for us. I've been trying to get us to do more international stuff. I know there's a lot of different countries out there that send their students internationally, and Nevada could be a great place for them to study. It's a different revenue source than what we traditionally have. And I just applaud all those that have worked on this and look forward to the template that we can carry forward to other countries and other areas. Thank you.
Regent Hayes, then Chaycha.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I understand what it is we're voting to approve here. Because it is a non-binding resolution, it's just more the board telling the chancellor and his staff, hey, we like the direction, kind of keep going, and then bring something more formal back to us, because passing this doesn't really do anything other than kind of give some encouragement. Am I wrong on that?
If I could.
Senator Riley?
Yes. It's also critical to actually begin the process with Mexico. They need the MOU to start releasing the dollars so they can actually begin the very specifics with our community colleges and state college. So the MOU is extremely important, that without this, we can't even begin the process. But to your point, yes, we will like to see this partnership bring back regular updates that are very specific as far as what partnerships actually come out of these.
Well, when you say updates, would that be an actual binding contract that we would do, or is this the only vote we're ever going to have on whether to partner with the folks from Tamaulipas?
The president. So, I mean, a lot would depend upon if they, I mean, if they're sending students and the students end up coming here, then they would work individually with the institutions. And I wouldn't see necessarily bringing that back to the board. But where there is a system-wide need, we may be bringing back additional contracts before the board that binds the whole system. If it's an individual agreement with the colleges, they already have that authority, and they do that on an ongoing basis.
Thank you.
Regent Trajan.
Well, I'm a little confused. Why, Chancellor, if this is such an important program, as our presidents have already said, did this not come back as a, an actual contract to the board to review?
Regent Trajan. Chancellor Riley.
The because we're in the development stage, in order for them to begin, they've asked for an MOU from the state of Mexico to actually begin the process. Some of that will be individually with the institutions where they're actually sending students, and they'll negotiate that specifically. None of that can begin without the MOU. So as we develop the relationship, and it is a system-wide, we will take specific contracts back. But we're not at that point right now. But without the MOU, they cannot even begin to release any of the money or to begin negotiating any of the specific students' exchanges or faculty exchanges with each of the institutions.
If I understand the MOU as being non-binding, which it is by its terms, why would this give a state in Mexico the comfort level that they need to expend the funds?
I can't answer that on behalf. The presidents might, they've asked for the MOU. This is what they've requested in order to begin the relationship. But President Solis might want to be more specific.
Ben Solis, for the record. Regent Trajan, that's a great question. We had those discussions with the representatives. For their process, an MOU of some kind is very important. As I mentioned, they're ready to commence training opportunities with the NG institutions in different areas. But prior to them seeking the access to the funds that have already been set aside, they require more than a letter of intent or a gentleman's agreement. They require an MOU to access those funds. Once they have permission to access their funds, then they can work with individual contracts with each of the campuses for the specific kinds of training, be it logistics at TMCC, online with GBC or any of the other institutions, WNC or CSN or Nevada State. So each campus, because there are several of them, have different needs. They would work out their own details with each of the campuses. But in order for them to do it as a system to help support it, they need some kind of a memorandum of understanding.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it seems to me that what this board needs to do is to give the institution presidents the authority to proceed with negotiations for contracts with the state in Mexico. I don't know that this MOU provides that direction.
This is Joe Reynolds, General Counsel. If I could answer that question on page 2. There is a section of the MOU that provides for the additional collaboration of the specific individual institutions, and it states, upon the execution of this MOU, individual institutions of INCHI may separately collaborate with Tamaulipas to further develop and implement institution-specific programs and enter into agreements consistent with the intent, scope, and terms of this MOU. And so what's before the board today is just to provide a broad framework to, as Chancellor Riley stated, to begin that relationship, but also have room for all the INCHI institutions to negotiate more detailed, specific agreements.
Regent Carlo.
While I'm in full support of cross-border education and collaboration with other countries, from what I'm hearing from the presidents, this is more of a unilateral agreement in that Tamaulipas students are coming to our campuses. But the MOU states that this will be a bilateral agreement where our students go there. And my concern with that is the state of Tamaulipas is very dangerous. The State Department says that citizens should not be traveling there, and obviously our student safety is a top priority for me. So I'm not sure that while I understand that this is a general agreement to work together, and I agree with that, I'm not in favor of sending our students there at this time.
President Solis.
Yes, if I may. That's a great question, Regent Garallo. The discussion that we have had, and we have been very upfront with them on those, that as long as there are these concerns, that we would not be providing that type of support there. This would be that if in the distant future some things change and there are opportunities, but they are all, we've had those very same discussions with them, Regent.
Regent Hayes.
I think there's enough maze and possiblies and wiggle room words in here that it doesn't really obligate us to much. I like the idea of doing these type of collaborations. Regent Carvalho's point about the safety, I think, is important. And while President Solis pointed out that will be in the future, this MOU, if I recall, I'm trying to find this one, I think it only covers a four-year period.
Correct.
So I'm not sure we're going to have much bilateral during the time of this MOU. I'm going to support it because unless council or someone else on the board can point out to me where the risk is to our system in this very mealy-mouthed MOU that doesn't really obligate us to anything, if that's what they say they need in Mexico to move forward, what will be, I encourage very highly the campuses to do a more unilateral agreement during the four-year term of this because I don't see the safety turning around that quickly, and I'm no international safety expert, but that'd be a pretty quick turnaround. So unless somebody brings up something that is a real risk to our system, I will be supporting it, but I think it's more, as I described earlier, kind of a pat on the back and go get them as opposed to us really approving anything of legal substance here.
I just want to jump in on the security. I think there is a risk right now, right? The reason why we met on this side of the border is because of safety concerns. And so the way this reads right now, in the areas of collaboration, establish student academic exchange programs, allow faculty from both systems to visit campuses to participate in teaching, activities, research, workshops, academic events, cultural exchanges, and other educational programs. There's no restriction right now if we sign this that they can't go. But it is a level four with the State Department. And so I think there needs to be something around that, you know, it has to be safe to go. Because I don't know what we do if someone goes and we say, well, we signed it and it says that you're allowed to go there.
Mr. Chair, how would the board feel about a motion to approve an amended version of the MOU that does not permit our faculty, staff, students, employees to visit Tamaulipas until the State Department has lowered its risk assessment? Would that be something that the board would be amenable to?
Vice Chair Geddes?
I think the memorandum is fine as it is, and I would defer to the presidents and our Southern and Northern Command to make the determinations with faculty and staff if it is safe to go. We have our researchers and students traveling the world in many countries around the world that are labeled as a risk, and they set up protocols, and they help make those decisions on who can go where, and I would leave that authority with them.
President Solis?
And if I may, Regent Page, members of the board, on a personal note, being from the border, I cross regularly, so I wouldn't want to be precluded from traveling down as an employee because, you know, I've got friends and family there, so just as a side note.
Mr. Chair, if I could also just some guidance here. So in most of the international programs, there is a provision that we follow State Department guidance. So they, in fact, will give us a monthly update of what's safe and what isn't. And so in many community colleges, and I'm sure higher education institutions, use that as a guidance in terms of deciding whether a study abroad is appropriate or even whether discussions of the program development. So I would encourage us to keep it at that level because it fluctuates depending on the situation on the ground.
But should we have some language in here that mentions the State Department rating?
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the MOU with an amendment that says that any travel between any travel by our students, faculty, or staff as part of this program, which takes away President Solis's concerns about visiting family, as part of this program be subject to State Department recommendations on travel.
Mr. Chair, if I could say there is a motion on the floor already.
There was?
There was.
Oh.
And so you have to ask.
I would like to ask the maker of the motion, can we,
Vice Chair Geddes,
will you accept a very friendly amendment that any travel required by this program be subject to the most recent State Department guidance on travel for education?
And I think that's what I just rejected and said leave it to the President's and Northern and Southern Command. So if it fails.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Regent Trajak.
I don't think that this board should be getting into the decision-making process of who should be traveling where. We all travel to different parts of the world for our work, some of which is almost as dangerous as Baltimore. And so I want to get us out of the micromanaging here.
So, Mr. Chair, if I could say, just to reiterate, there is a motion and there is a second. So unless there's further, I just want to point out that there needs to be a vote on that motion if you want to then go forward.
Sure. I just want a point of clarification. For the State Department, the four advisory levels, just so we know, when we're voting blue, exercise normal precautions, yellow, exercise increased caution, orange, reconsider travel, red, do not travel. So just for the record, this is level four. And so if the board's comfortable with people making that decision to travel there.
I'm comfortable with the President's and the head of Southern and Northern Command.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. We're going to do a roll call vote.
I had a feeling. Okay. Vice Chair Geddes.
Aye.
Regent Hayes.
Unfortunately, no.
Regent Lieberman.
Aye.
Regent McAdoo.
Aye.
Regent McMichael.
Aye.
Regent Moran.
Aye.
Chair Page.
No.
Regent Perkins.
No.
Regent Trajak.
Yes.
Regent Carter.
Yes.
Regent Carvalho.
No.
Regent Del Carlo.
Yes.
Regent Dubrava.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Motion passes.
Okay. We are going to move the item number 19, 2019-25 Strategic Plan and Handbook Revision Mission Statement, WNC. President Solis.
Thank you, Regent Page. Vince Solis for the record, President WNC. Members of the board, what you have before you as a document is the requirement that we bring our strategic plan to the board for consideration. I will share with you some information about our newly structured strategic plan, which is in line with the latest feedback, input, and insight from our accrediting body at the Northwest Commission on Colleges and Universities. This strategic plan may look very different to some of you who have been working with our campus strategic plans for a long time. It is a more condensed version of what has been brought to the board prior. This is with feedback and input from our accrediting body. What the accrediting bodies are looking for, because the nature of strategic planning has changed so much for the institution because of the rapid change of technology, et cetera, is what drives our work rather than listing many key indicators that make these very long, lengthy plans. So what we have done are a couple of things that are important to not only WNC, but also important to the institution. First and foremost, we have taken the input from the accrediting body, and we have aligned our strategic plan with our NCHE goals, so that what we have done in terms of what drives our work will align with our access goal, our student success goals, our closing the achievement gap, workforce and research goals. So that was very important to how we drafted this plan. We wanted to make sure that we were not just working specifically within the institution, but working to meet the goals of NCHE. The items that we developed over an 18-month period on campus, which included community stakeholders, our faculty, our staff, our students, many meetings, includes the elements of being student-centered, inquiry-driven, and data-informed as values that drive our work. Our value statement that was written into the strategic plan is that WNC nurtures community connections and promotes an environment of equity and inclusion. The mission that was drafted for the institution at WNC is that WNC contributes to the solutions for the 21st century by providing effective educational pathways for students and communities in Nevada. And the core themes that will continue to drive our work over the next 7 years, which these plans are laid out for, is that we will be focusing on transfer education, professional education, or also known as career technical education, and the concept of lifelong learning. We have had many discussions about what it means to be a campus that produces really great students that are qualified to enter the workforce with high skills, and it's this concept of lifelong learning, this 60-year curriculum where we espouse the benefits of being a lifelong learner, and those items, like I said, transfer education, the professional education, the lifelong learning, give all of our students that come to campus an opportunity to seek their goals and continue whether they want to go to work or go to UNR or UNLV or one of the other four-year institutions. So I do want to thank all the folks on campus that helped put this document together. Like I said, it is the first institution coming before the board with this new kind of format. From speaking to my peers, the other presidents, they are also looking at similar formats for their strategic plans. We have shared this, so I'm available for any questions that may relate to the plan or any of the contents that are in there, but I wanted to give you a little bit of background as to why it may look a little bit different from the other plans that have been worked or brought to the board before. So I'm open for any questions, members of the board.
Chancellor Riley.
Yeah, if I could, I want to thank President Solis and your team at Western Nevada College and ensuring that they are aligned to the board's goals, our five strategic goals. I think your team did a good job in ensuring where they linked together, where they aligned, and were very specific about metrics and outcomes. So good job.
And if I may, members of the board, Vince Elise, for the record, I want to echo and thank the board and the chancellor for providing this high-level guidance. I think that this serves as a very sticky space. It's the glue that holds the focus together. So I think that having that come from this body in terms of an overall approach to what's important to our institutions and particularly WNC, I think it's been a great approach having been new to the system over the last 6 months. I did want to thank the board and the chancellor for allowing us to build our plan to feed into these goals and continue the work at WNC to meet our goals with NCHE.
Regent Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chancellor Riley stole my thunder. That's exactly what I was going to say. Seems that this is very well thought out, and it fits very well within the NCHE goals. And I'd like to say thank you and appreciate all the time and effort that you all put into this.
Thank you, Regent Perkins.
Okay. With that, I'll make, if there's no further questions.
Regent DiCarlo.
Thank you, Chair Page. Just so I understand the process, I think you did a marvelous job, too. And the Northwest Commission on Accreditation hasn't seen this yet,
yes,
have they?
They have. We have been speaking with the folks there, making sure that what the document that was produced is in line with the things that they're looking for in a more condensed version of our strategic plans. I think what's really important from the commission that has come down is this idea of getting us to think differently as a campus about what drives our work rather than listing 100 things that we're going to measure. I will say that we will continue to measure these items because we want to know and we want to assess what works and doesn't work, but those will be placed into individual plans within the president's office, the VP's office, and we have these escalating plans that will fit into this, and this is what we'll do our measuring. But in terms of what drives our work and the message to the campus and to our community is these are the values that help us do our work at WNC. So that was the feedback that we had from the commission.
Okay, and I would say that to have 11 pages is terrific instead of reams and reams. I mean, you guys have cut to the chase with our strategic goals, and I think WNC has laid the groundwork and the template and, you know, it's best practices. So CSM, when it's their turn, Nevada State, TMCC, GBC, heavy lifting's been done for you, so thank you. President Solis.
And I would be remiss, members of the board, I cannot take credit for this plan. This is something that was in place way before I got to campus. We've got an exceptional group of folks that have been working in the IR department, in our research department, in the VP of Instructions Office. They have done the heavy lifting. We have worked to make sure that we are in line with that. But I think the biggest elements that took place on campus is that there was a lot and a lot and a lot of meetings to provide that feedback. Even towards the very end of prior to submitting, we were still fine-tuning and making sure that we were on point with what we wanted to submit. So this is not something I can take credit for. This is something that the team put in place. Scott Morrison, Kathy Fulkerson, Darla Dodge, Mark Gann, they've been working on this for the last 18 months. So kudos to the team on campus.
Regent Chachok.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, go ahead, Regent Chachok.
I just want to make sure that we as a board always keep in mind the mission of community colleges, which is workforce development and articulation. They're not liberal arts colleges. And I think that this plan, which includes the lifelong learning component of that, stays true to the board's stated mission for our community colleges.
Thank you, Regent Chachok. So we had a motion from Regent Perkins, second from Vice Chair Geddes. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
One opposed. No abstentions. Thank you, President Slurs. Okay. No opposed. Okay. We are going to move to item number 20, Challenges of Growth, NSC. President Patterson.
Thank you, Chair Page. It's a pleasure to be able to talk about this topic with the board here at Nevada State College. And I didn't prepare a big PowerPoint, or I'm not going to throw a bunch of slides with data on you. I'm going to talk to you more directly about what I'm seeing in terms of the president of both the short term and the long term. And my objective is to get the board's input on the possible options we may pursue, not for the purpose of an action item, but for the purposes of making sure I rely on your expertise and your vision of what the State College should be as we go forward here, because I really feel like we're at a crossroads in terms of the college's growth. So from an historical standpoint, Nevada State College was kind of clipping along at a 4 to 6% annual growth rate. There were a couple of dips back right before the recession or at the start of the recession. But in general, we've grown about 4 to 6% per year. And that made us, over the last 10 years, based on the 16 class, that made us the second fastest growing public four-year college in the country. In 2015, we moved into this building and the Nursing Science and Education building. Here on the campus, we added 130,000 square feet due to those two buildings, and it for the first time allowed us to consolidate the campus. At that time, about half the campus was located on Water Street in leased buildings, and so by getting these two new buildings allowed us to consolidate the campus, and it added about 70,000 square feet net in that process. Now, we recognized that we were going to run out of space pretty quickly, even under a 4 to 6% growth rate. So in the 2017 session, the board had prioritized the Nevada State College Education Building as the second priority behind the UNR Engineering Building, and then the CSN-NSC collaboration as the third priority. Those two projects did not get funded in the 17 session, but the planning money did come in that session. And that seemed to be just fine for the college based on this steady growth rate that we were anticipating. And then right after the legislature met, the fall of 2017 happened. I can't exactly explain it after all the dynamics of why it occurred, but we had an increase of 72% in first-time freshmen and 90% full-time. So that was a great cause of celebration at the campus. We had finally been recognized in the Las Vegas Valley by the students as to what kind of experience we were offering, and we were very excited about that. And we're still excited about that. But as we started to realize the implications of that level of growth rate, it's presenting some challenges for the college and projecting into the future what that might look like. And so that's playing out in a number of ways. So when you have that level of increase in freshmen, how do you even accommodate that? Particularly if you saw the slide yesterday on math remediation, we get all of our students into math remediation in their first year. Only 2% of students don't get some form of math, either college level or stretch courses, that get them on the pathway to a degree. So we know those math and English and other core courses are absolutely critical. So that meant we had to ramp up largely with part-time faculty to find the math faculty and the English faculty that semester or the spring semester in order to make that happen. So we rallied as an institution, and I think we managed to make it a pretty good experience and get those courses taught. But for the first time in, I think, the years that I've been here, we had a measurable drop in retention. We have that large fall 17 class going into the 18 class. And I think that's something that we have to acknowledge as a consequence of a growth rate, right, like that, particularly for a freshman class. Our transfer classes have stayed relatively stable and continued down that 4 to 6% growth rate per year on the transfer students. So we're really talking about first-time freshmen is really accelerating the growth. So what are the different issues that creates just besides that chaotic first and second semester with that kind of growth rate? So we taught this biennium 30% more weighted student credit hours than last biennium. So our state operating budget, if it's approved by the legislature, will go up 30%. That's for students we already taught. So now to match the student experience that we had before the fall of 17, that really means as an institution, we need to use those dollars and we need to hire about 25% or so new faculty and staff this next year. Or maybe if we can't find the right folks, the following year to manage the student population that we are teaching now. If that growth trajectory occurs, then we start the whole cycle over again. Now, historically, the weighted funding formula was built off of three-year weighted averages. But there was also a component where it projected. So I'm not advocating today for a change in that form. I'm just trying to explain how things have changed. That was both good and bad for institutions. When you had a three-year weighted average and you projected it out, if you were on the upswing, that was great because it got you more resources in between sessions in order to continue to build your staff. If you were on a three-year weighted average going on decline, that was going to increase the decline, if you will, if that average were used. And then if you don't meet the projections, then that meant the legislature was going to pull back funding for you in the next session. So there are always consequences or complications to any way that the funding formula is designed. But for us, we did get the benefit of an additional distribution out of the operating pool, and that helped us smooth that a little bit. So we were able to start hiring the faculty and staff earlier last year and into this year that we would otherwise have had to wait a full cycle until the legislature approved the new budget. So it's a really substantial issue for an institution, particularly for our faculty and staff, to be able to absorb that kind of increase in students and still maintain the quality of the experience, because we're dealing with this always rapidly escalating student load. The other consequence is on the physical infrastructure. So while we were clipping along at that 4 to 6% growth rate, and it looked just fine for an education building to come online in the fall of 21, if the legislature approves it this year, that changed just overnight. And, I wish we were going into that building in the fall right now, because that's the kind of acceleration that's occurring at the college. So the only largely state-funded building at the college is the LAS building, which is about 40,000 square feet, which was finished in 2008. The other buildings are the Dawson building, which is the vitamin factory, which is the original building of the college, which is about 30,000 square feet and still is absolutely critical to our space needs. We were able to open the Raker Student Success building this fall. That's about 20,000 square feet. The legislature appropriated about $1 million toward that, and we put in about $2 million when you look at the cost plus the remodel of that building to make it functional. But that's an important additional square footage that we have. And then we have the 130,000 square feet between the Rogers Center and the Nursing Science and Education building that we self-financed. So $3.4 million of our budget goes out every year to pay for the debt service on these buildings out 28 years. So there was no separate state appropriation to cover the cost of those buildings. So we are somewhat now financially strapped because of that debt load that we carry as a college. And so even though we look really successful in terms of the additional state operating dollars that are coming in, those are going to try to keep up with the student experience in order to make it a good student experience. So when you look at it overall of what has been funded through the state, primarily funded through the state, only about less than 20% of our existing square footage on campus was funded primarily by the state. So what I'm asking you to think about is that we are at this 30% growth rate every 2 years. If that were to continue, we would double in size every approximately 6 years. In the meantime, we've only had one state building funded in the entire history of the college. And so my objective is not to whine. I'm not like that. It's not my objective. My objective is to figure out the way out of the box. That is the objective. But I think it's difficult to anticipate that unless the state were to put us on a dedicated capital plan for growth, that we can expect that not only the Nursing Science and Education and the share of the CSN building, but there might need to be two more buildings at this growth rate in the next 6 years of the college. And does the state have the resources to do it? And we're not the only priority. I have presidents to the right and left of me that would be very unhappy with our institution if somehow we sucked up all the capital dollars and other state agencies as well across the state. So we know we have to be realistic that it's not necessarily going to happen, that there's going to be the kind of capital infrastructure that's going to help develop the campus. So I'll talk a little bit about the short-term kind of immediate needs and what we're trying to do to accommodate that. So we have determined that we have 35 new faculty and staff starting this fall that do not have offices right now. So our immediate objective will be to put what we think will be about $1.2 million into a renovation of the Dawson building, lower floor, to accommodate those additional faculty and staff. That will help us bridge the time to an education building, assuming that's approved by the state and is built and ready by the fall of 21. So that's our pretty good initial plan. Our other options that we might have to look at would be shared office space, because our two primary deficiencies in space right now are office space and student study space and computer labs and student affinity space for all the groups that are developing on campus to have space. So our classroom space, because of redesign of our scheduling, which I give credit to the provost and faculty for being able to figure that out, our classroom space is still okay for the next couple of years, we think. So it's really a focus on those two areas. Then in the medium term, we've got to look at some different options. We've got to look at modular or prefab construction as a less expensive way to build out the space that we need. We could look at lease space. There isn't really any lease space left in this immediate adjacent area. There is lease space in other parts of Henderson, but we could look at that. We're obviously reluctant to go down that road, having finally consolidated the campus, to then look at splitting the campus out again. So that is of a concern. We're also looking at potentially a major remodel of the Dawson Vitamin Factory that would require us to add a second floor on that building. That's a much more expensive proposition because then we have to add the structural support to make that happen. That's also a lease building, so that will involve some negotiation with the city, either on a long-term lease or acquisition of the building for us to put that amount of money into that facility. So at the end of the day, is that the best course of action? We're not sure. But it is one option. On the long term, we have a number of options that we could consider. We can talk about a shift to more online or hybrid instruction. That comes with its own both positive benefits in terms of space utilization and flexibility to students, but we have to couple that or temper that with traditionally lower success rates in online environments, particularly by certain demographic populations. As I mentioned, we could look at a longer-term capital plan from the state. I just don't know how realistic that is. We could potentially look at expansion to a branch campus model to locate possibly in collaboration with CSN or at other facilities that might be available at a lower cost point for us in other parts of the valley. Again, it comes with its own complication, but this campus has been very remarkable in attracting students from across the valley. So while it's kind of neck and neck with CSN right now in terms of the most diverse campus in the state, our freshman classes are coming in 90% diverse. So we'll probably, when the fall 18-19 enrollment comes out, we'll be the most diverse campus in the state. We have lots of students come from Vegas and North Las Vegas. Transportation is an issue. So it's not a terrible long-term idea to think about should there be a branch campus of Nevada State College out in the Northwest Valley or in the Southwest Valley, as we've talked about before. Those could potentially be solutions that would help students by limiting the transportation kinds of challenges. We need to look at more public-private partnerships on this ground. We have 512 acres of ground here now. Only about 300 acres is necessary for a master plan that would accommodate over 20,000 students long-term. So we have the ability to use the acreage, as we've talked about a lot, to potentially generate business opportunities here that would provide the college with revenue, that revenue could then just be turned around into helping build physical facilities. So that's a creative thing that we'll look at, but that's a long-term kind of solution. And, of course, we can look at expanding private donations to the college that would help us in building physical facilities without having to rely on state support. That's a bit of a challenge for a state college. We don't have a large alumni base yet. We don't necessarily have the programs or attention or visibility that attracts large donors, but we've been very grateful for the donors that we have that are often very family, foundation-based, or family-based that are really located right here in the valley. But that's a long-term thing that we need to think about in terms of our growth. So that's kind of a snapshot of what we're thinking about. I'm sure you have other good ideas or some things you can share with me about the direction you'd like to see. But I kind of want to do this in a very public way so that you recognize the challenges that we face. We are looking at how we can manage the admissions process better. That's primarily freshman-driven. As Dr. Marshall expressed, we're looking at ways we can avoid an over-reliance on GPA. But just to highlight that issue, which we hope to bring to the board in June, the issue is that the universities and the state college enrollment is based on a minimum GPA. There is no provision in state or board policy that would allow us to limit enrollment, really. So we're not able to manage enrollment. We weren't able to say when all the freshmen started enrolling, you know what, I don't think we can accommodate this number of freshmen. We just had to accept them. And the worst way you can manage enrollment is by not getting students the classes they need in the first year. That's a recipe for disaster. So that's why we'll be coming to you to discuss that piece of it. But that's kind of a longer term or medium term solution as well, because students aren't just going to dramatically not come to the college, and we're not going to be able to immediately implement that or have great impact in the short run with that. And we don't want to. We want to be an access college, and we want to continue to grow our programs and grow and develop organically as a college should. So those are my thoughts, and I would open it to the board to questions or comments or solutions.
Regent Hayes, then Trey Chalk, then Del Carlo. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. Thank you, President Patterson. I think that those of you that have been on the board and around for a while know that I think that Nevada State College is the key to success for our state. We have approximately 23% of the people in our state that have a four-year degree or higher. That is considerably lower than anywhere else in the country. The most efficient and affordable way for a student and for the state, because they pay a lower weighted student credit hour to Nevada State than they do to the universities, for us to improve that number is to get more students going through Nevada State. I hate that we have to look at limiting enrollment. One thing you mentioned that we talked about with the universities a few months ago is I believe, and staff, council, as I recall, agreed that there's been a misinterpretation on the campuses that when we say there's a minimum GPA requirement, that that is a mandatory acceptance of all people over that. I mean, I pointed out that Cal Berkeley has like a 3.0, or no, it's a 2.7 minimum GPA requirement. I challenge you to find someone with a 2.7 who got into Cal Berkeley. It is a floor, not a mandatory, but if we need to change something in policy or look at that to say this is a floor and you have to decide, look, we can only let in X number of students this year and you have to figure out an admissions process to do it, then unfortunately we may have to go to that. I hope there's other solutions. This has been one of my favorite meetings since I've been on the board. I have been harping on a number of issues for years, and five of them have come up in the last 2 days. Guaranteed tuition. Increased tutors and counselors and advisors, which we talked about, addressing our remedial education problem, and then finally, access to the Southwest and the growth of Nevada State College. There are 300,000-plus people that live in the Southwest Valley that are 40 to 45 minutes from the nearest institution of higher ed run by INSHE, and that's without rush hour. Those people are locked out of higher ed. I know that you had talked with the previous president of CSN about doing a collaboration on a rented facility out there. That's one thing I would propose to the board we might encourage is let's find a way to do a joint CSN-Nevada State campus out in the Southwest where so many of those students don't have access now, or if they do, it's a nightmare for them to get to. You know, from Rhodes Ranch or Mountain's Edge, really UNLV is the closest campus. The other is you'd talked with President Richards before, when he was president of CSN, about doing 2+2s on campus and renting space in the community colleges. You brought us what I think a lot of us thought was a really good proposal of emulating what Northern Arizona University had done. For those new to the board, Northern Arizona had collaborated with a lot of the community colleges in Arizona where they went on and would basically rent a couple of classrooms to start with, and then as things grew, they could rent a floor, rent a building, and if it got really big, then we could look at opening a campus. But we know students, a large number of students, are already finding our community college campuses. Is there a way to collaborate with the community colleges and say, hey, can we start out by renting 3 or 4 classrooms from you? And if this grows, keep it going. I mean, I know it's not the greatest long-term solution, but going back to 2000 or 2001 when the RAND study came out, so we commissioned a study, our predecessors commissioned a study that led to the creation of Nevada State College. The RAND Corporation did a study that said, at that time, in 2000, when we had, 2.3 million people in the whole state, where now we're at over 3, that we should have 4 to 6 state college campuses. We opened one, the recession hit, and that slowed, but now Nevada State is not just hitting its stride, it is thriving, it is growing, and its growth is going to suffocate it. Do we need to look at, as a system, of figuring out, do we need, I know I keep saying Southwest, I could be wrong, it seems to me Southwest is appropriate, do we need a Northern Nevada campus? I think that the students in Northern Nevada would be well served by a branch or eventually a standalone campus in Nevada State College. Should we look at putting something up in Sparks or Reno? Should we look at doing more 2+2s and 3+1s with Great Basin and Western Nevada? But to me, I think that the most affordable, easy to implement solution right now is one doing like a leased space somewhere like in the Southwest or somewhere that we see a need. Maybe it's the Northeast, somewhere that is really deprived of higher ed that will help those students get there easier, and leasing space from the community college buildings. I know it takes away from your centralized campus, and it's such a neat campus the way this has grown. But the ultimate goal is to educate people. And you guys started out in a couple of office buildings on Water Street. So, you know, maybe the next branches have to start out with something similar. But I'd hate to see the students who really are best fit at a state college. Not every student needs to go to a research university. Not all of us are going to be doing that type of work. We need people to get four-year degrees to fill the jobs of the future. And the best way to do it is Nevada State. So leasing space, collaborating with the community colleges. I think, for me, those are the best routes to go. I'd be interested to hear what everybody else has to say.
Thank you. And Regent Hayes, I just want to clarify one thing, though, and CFO Cleaner can correct me, but every campus gets the same weighted student credit hour as a dollar amount. So a 200 level at Nevada State, same as at UNLV and CSN. Correct. Okay, Regent Trachok, then Del Carlo.
Thank you. President Patterson, I'm intrigued by your comment on satellite classrooms and satellite operations throughout the valley. Could you share with us more of your thoughts along this line?
Thank you, Regent Trachok. And I think Regent Hayes, you know, really touched on that because it's been a discussion we've had for quite a while. We went down to Northern Arizona University about 4 years ago and really talked to them about how they're delivering four-year degrees on two-year college sites. And that was a very productive conversation. And the challenge of that is identifying the programs that you can build out that will be successful at the location. It's hard to supplant entire general education and all of your curriculum into a different location. But if you can focus partnering with the college about the programs in demand there, it can actually, we learn from them, help build enrollments at the community college level because the students see a pathway to a four-year degree that's nearby them, right where, and they can start at the same place that they'll finish. And so I think there's a lot of advantages to a model like that. In our enhancement budget to the state, there is a component of building out a statewide mission. Primarily, that's been focused on work that we're doing with Western Nevada College and Truckee Meadows Community College in terms of 2+2s or 3+1s in different subject areas. The same model would work here. One of the things that the college has been very proactive about is working with the community colleges to share upper division enrollment too, which has a higher weight. And if we compare the expertise of the community college faculty with the expertise of the state college, then we can do these kinds of 3-1s or 2.5, 1.5, even beyond the traditional 2-2 enrollments, and it can end up to be both beneficial to the students and economically beneficial to both institutions. So I do see that as a good growth plan for the college around the Las Vegas Valley as well as other parts of the state, as opposed to just trying to start an entirely new campus of a college. I think we can help meet state need across the state in those ways. And I've had productive discussions with every president of the two-year colleges here. They've all been very positive discussions. They just are going to need to move at some point to an action plan.
Thank you. Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I thought I read in our NC clips that you've had some public forums. And what were the results of those, President Patterson?
Oh, thank you. They're mixed. We did three forums around the valley, one here at campus, one at the Latin Chamber, and one at the Switch facility in the Southwest. And in general, the community feedback that we received, we would have liked them to have been better attended. One of the things when you raise an admission standard, as UNLV and UNR know from 2008, 2005 actually is when that started, it can be quite controversial. And in a way, you welcome that because it means that the community and students want to go to your institution and they don't want to have their access limited to the institution. So if we had received no pushback, I would have been actually unhappy. But we did receive some pushback. We did receive concern, is this going to limit access to populations that view Nevada State College as their best pathway? And so that's what is going to be our challenge in bringing something to the board that we can recommend and is to figure out how we can both bring a policy that's more enrollment management driven. And I could give you a few examples of that. For example, we have a large pre-nursing population that comes in. And we tried to solve that issue by growing our nursing program, which was critical to help meet state need. It wasn't just for these purposes, but we quadrupled the size of our nursing program in about 4 years. We now will graduate 288 students, bachelor's prepared students in nursing once the cohorts are fully completed with our programs of study. That's about half part-time and half full-time. So that's the largest program in the state for a bachelor's program. And we have an RN to BSN program that is fully online that we have over 500 accepted in that program in a year and a half since the board approved that program. So it's an example of how, you know, we can really grow out programs. But what happened was is while the first cohorts of that larger class size then ended up opening more spaces, we just had a lot more students start coming to the college. And so now we have the same kind of issue of we haven't developed an enrollment management policy that even manages by degree. And we need, whether we did it by means of a change in admission policy or we did it by means in how we can do better advising at the front end during the recruiting process, we need to manage students that are coming into degrees that maybe not the degrees they want. And another example of that is over 50% of our students transfer out of the institution. We're not a transfer institution, but over 50% transfer out. Part of it's pre-nursing, but part of it is students start here and we don't have the degree that they want. We don't have engineering. We don't have architecture. We don't have a lot of degrees that the universities have. We don't have technical education that the community colleges can offer. So they're starting at the wrong place. When you look at our success data, we have a low graduation rate, but 65% are still in school someplace after 6 years, which is pretty phenomenal. So we need to have an enrollment management policy that better defines that. So I guess that would be my response to your question, if that answers it.
And just as a follow-on, I really appreciate this discussion, and I think this discussion really is germane to our entire system, that at a future meeting we really need to be looking at a strategic plan for the next 5-10 years with the growth of the population in Nevada and the projected growth and all the jobs that we are going to need, where we're going to go with that. And the legislature needs to be brought in on this once we know our plan, brought in on it, because this is going to be a huge statewide problem if we don't have the people educated in the state. We want them to stay in the state, and we need those jobs. So this is a bigger problem than just the immediate growth needs and space constraints you have right now.
Thank you. Regent Lieberman.
Couple things. I have the honor of participating in one of your focus groups, and it was a real honest conversation. It wasn't a bunch of people sitting in a room championing Nevada State, nor was it people that were automatically negative. They had honest feedback to give and productive feedback, I thought. I thought you have come a long, long way from the Water Street days, and you've always had a campus and a student body that is willing to stand by the state college in great times and in bad times, and they've always been willing to be a stakeholder to the conversation. I don't think that Nevada State should be for everyone. I think that it should be for alternative learners or people that don't necessarily fit into other scenarios. But if there are workforce development issues, maybe those need to be focused on the CSN experience, and this becomes a little bit more selective than it's been, because I'm just worried that your numbers are going to get so high so quick that you won't be able to manage enrollment with quality academics at the same time. So I think it's a very, very important conversation to have, but I think you've come a long, long way since the initial start on Water Street.
Thank you.
Ms. Peters? And then Regent Moran.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. Abby Peters, Faculty Senate Chair, NSC. I'm a business professor, so in business we have something the same. Structure follows strategy. So I just want to bring up the point that, and when we're considering how we deal with the capacity issue and where we fit, do we need to offer more online instruction because we don't have space, or we need to move to operating on community college campuses or leasing office just to look at what is the strategy of the institution. Hopefully, I think as soon as June, we'll have our strategic plan, our longer-term strategic plan to present to the board. But I do fear this idea, like, we don't have the space, so let's offer more online education, or let's operate on the community college campuses just to have a place to put people. So I would just caution and make sure that as we're making these decisions, well, obviously as an institution, but also as the board's considering it, what's in line with our strategy and not the opposite. Like, we're operating under this strategy because this is the structure we have. And I understand we have many financial constraints, but just to keep that in mind. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Moran.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair. I just wanted to say a couple of things. I mean, it's been really fun working with you, Bart, or President Patterson, over all these years. I remember the very first meeting that we took down the street at Remedies with our good friend Jim Gibson and some other notables that have been instrumental, obviously, in helping with the development of the successful development of the college out here. And I was reflecting yesterday on riding motorcycles 45, 44 years ago, just right outside, maybe right on this land, actually, as I was riding with other friends of mine towards Boulder City and through the caves along the railroad tracks. But you've done something else out here. The campus is so beautiful. It has taken a village. We've had those conversations over the course of time. But I would respectfully disagree with Regent Lieberman. I believe, and I'm not sure if that his characterization was on this point, but I think that Nevada State College is for everyone. I mean, I think that there's something for everyone. I don't think that there's a break in terms of, you know, one institution providing this fit and another institution providing another fit. I see this as being an ultimate destination at the end of the day, where you can take that, you can take the tools that you get here and have a tremendous quality of life. And I just wanted to thank you for that, and also thank you for hosting me and the rest of the board, obviously, here at this meeting today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Regent Carter.
So the Dawson building could be two floors, but I just wanted to ask a question. If you remodel the first floor, does that prevent you from adding the second floor, or does that need to happen at the same time?
It doesn't. We've looked at, worked with the architects to look at the phasing of that, and we think we can do it in a two-phase way without unduly disrupting things. And the objective this summer will be to have this done this summer so it's ready in the fall so it won't disrupt things. And then the objective was to be able to figure out the timing, preferably be after the School of Education building is built, because that gives us more flexibility in moving faculty and staff and student spaces, so we can get that kind of remodel done. But that's a good observation.
Thank you. I've a comment and then a question, and I think we are touching back on one of Regent Hayes's and Regent Carter's, the mandatory advising. I mean, if you're looking at your enrollment strategy and you're advising those students earlier, you may help direct them to the proper institution earlier if this isn't really where they need to be if they're transferring out. So that could help in your overall strategy, as was pointed out there. Mm-hmm. And really, based on your timeline, I think we heard yesterday when we talked about the Shadow Lane parking garage that once the Raider Stadium's done, construction prices may come down and there may be more opportunities there. And I was just curious, as far as our code and our handbook and or the Nevada revised statutes, you mentioned many different options as far as building or leasing spaces, public, private. If you've identified any barriers there or any change that we may need to seek now to give you that flexibility and opportunities to pursue those.
I don't think so. I mean, we obviously, if we're going to do any kind of long-term lease of facility, that would come to the board for approval. The issue of public-private partnerships are also a board approval item. Frankly, the housing project is a form of public-private partnership, and that's intended to also generate some revenue out of that project, which would be normal. So there'll be other things that will have been proposed on the campus that we haven't pursued yet. We do have a water. I know this is a common, you know, thing to sort of tease me about, but we do have a water infrastructure issue here on campus. So it makes it a little hard for us to figure out how to do public-private partnerships on a lot of the ground because we don't have a water pressure system that will avoid a very expensive pumping. So we think we can figure out a model where if a development comes in, I'll just give you an example. We've talked about the idea of building an assisted living facility that could partner with acute care on the nursing side and potentially even partner with the medical school, for example, and partner with students that are in, you know, areas of sociology and psychology. There's a lot of things that something like that could bring. I'm just using an example before anyone gets, like, upset and like, oh, wait a minute. But that's an example of something that we could start to finance or develop some projects where they start contributing into the infrastructure costs so that we could then build out the infrastructure that could accelerate that. So those are some really terrific business kind of development strategies that we have an opportunity to pursue, and ultimately UNLV and CSN at Great Basin, all of which have received land designations, I'll have opportunity to look at those kinds of options as well on those acreages.
Thank you. And when Southern Nevada Water Authority builds your water tank, you can have them build an extra large house you can put offices in. With that, we will close item number 20, go on to item number 22, handbook revision, freedom of expression, aspirational statement of values, Chief Counsel Joe Reynolds. 21. Close 20, open 21. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. What's before the board for approval today is the work of a lot of folks, academic and administrative faculty, student representatives, the general counsel from the eight institutions, and is truly, I think, an example of the shared governance model. And the First Amendment is 45 words in our United States Constitution, and its meaning has been debated continuously for, you know, the past 200-plus years. I don't think a session goes by before the United States Supreme Court where they don't have a First Amendment case and issue. And there's tension in those discussions about what it means, and there isn't necessarily bright lines. More spaces to allow for competing ideas to competing values. And what we did through the working group is had very robust discussions about who we are as an institution, as Nevadans, and who we also aspire to be. And every word in this policy statement, every period, has been thoroughly discussed, vetted by members of the working group. I have traveled to Berkeley to meet with Dean Chemerinsky of their law school, who I appreciate and would like to thank for consulting on this. Would also like to thank Regent Trachok for his assistance in consulting on this. This statement has also been vetted and actually given a quote-unquote terrific by the outside First Amendment group FIRE, which is the freedom of individual rights in education. They actually stated they believe this to be a model, a statement for other higher education institutions. And so with that, would just like to present this for the board's review and consideration.
Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Motion
so
from
moved.
Regent Hayes, second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions for Chief Counsel?
I have a question.
Regent Trachok.
Thank you. Thanks, Joe, for all your hard work on this. I have one question of the Vice Chancellor, and then I have a question of the Presidents. And if we could take a look at the paragraph in the statement, it says, this freedom, however, is not absolute in narrowly defined circumstances, et cetera, et cetera. Are you with that paragraph?
Yes, I am.
It's the third paragraph, just to, for people looking for it.
In my question, I think you already answered it, Joe, when you gave your introduction, but my question is Dean Chemerinsky comfortable with this statement here, or I guess the first question would be, did you have the opportunity to discuss this language with the dean?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. And again, traveled to the Berkeley Law School and met with him, and he was gracious enough to give me some of his time. And for those who might not be familiar with Dean Chemerinsky, I think he's regarded as the one of the premier, if not the premier, First Amendment lawyers in the country.
And then my question is to the presidents. A couple of years ago, the presidents had requested both publicly and privately that the board provide guidance in the First Amendment area that the presidents could use whenever an issue, a First Amendment issue, came up in their campuses. And so my question is to the presidents, does this provide the guidance that you require?
President Johnson?
Yes, Regent Trichok, this is exactly the guidance that is needed. And we have actually given trainings to our faculty with these very holdouts that professors themselves can limit a person from outbursts and from speechifying in class by saying, this is neither the time nor the place for that. We will not control the subject matter of your presentation, but it's not appropriate for this class. I've heard Dr. Chemerinsky on two occasions, one nationally and one on our campus, reemphasize these very limitations on free speech, and it makes it quite applicable to the campus environment. So thank you.
President Miana?
I agree with President Johnson that it does give us as much guidance as anyone can ever get on these issues, because when you actually have a specific example, they can be complicated. At UNLV, we have a very similarly worded policy, which we have made available to everybody. So I am in full support of this statement.
Any other presidents? President Hilgerson.
Yes.
They're all shaking their heads.
I just have one thank you.
No correction, they're nodding their heads.
Nodding their heads.
Not shaking, thank you.
I would like to thank Dean Chemerinsky for taking the time out of a very, very busy schedule to meet with our staff. He is the First Amendment guru in the United States who regularly argues these issues before the United States Supreme Court.
Thank you. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. That closes item number 21. We are going to take a six-minute recess. Be back here at 10:50. All right, we will resume with item number 22, Handbook Revision, Reporting Employee Contract Buyouts. Chief General Counsel Reynolds.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. This matter was originally presented to the Board of Regents back in November to talk about some conceptual policy discussions surrounding the amount of funds that went to employee contract buyouts. I worked with the general counsels and the presidents of each of the institutions to craft an amendment and a revision to our handbook in Title IV, Chapter 3. And essentially this is to allow some more transparency, more accountability, and some more reporting with respect to these buyouts. It This new provision essentially does three things. It requires that any employee buyout be approved by the president of each of the institution. It then has a process where information regarding that buyout is reported to the Office of Chancellor. And third, that the chancellor will present an annual report to the board regarding those buyouts in the future.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
Motion from Regent DeBrava, second from Regent Lieberman. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 23, handbook revision, letters of appointment, and temporary faculty policies and benefits. Chief Financial Officer Klinger.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes and Regents. This item comes before you today on behalf of the Human Resources Advisory Council and the business officers. The request before you is to extend the employment period for LOAs from 12 months to up to 24 months. Currently, the current policy requires that when an LOA reaches 12 months, they have to be terminated and have a short break before being rehired.
Do I have a motion for approval? Motion from Regent Perkins, second. From Regent Del Carlo, questions? Regent Hayes.
Yeah, my only concern about this is we all saw the significant abuse of the LOA process in the medical school at UNLV over the last couple of years, and to give them longer to appoint people on LOAs causes me concern. Now, I'm not going to say we need to make all policies based on the fact that there was one bad actor out there. I mean, I think we see the result of that with AJR5 in Nevada, where they're mad at one actor who's no longer with the institution, and we shouldn't penalize all of our institutions based on one bad actor who's no longer with the institution. But are there safeguards we could put in place in conjunction with this, or to bring back at a later meeting, to make sure we aren't having that same abuse? And for those who weren't here, there was an employee who was appointing unqualified people to positions that were, I mean, it was stated in one document, the Friends and Family Hiring Program, where people were being appointed on letters of appointment and being taken outside of the normal hiring process, where we would have had requirements put in for the job. And I just don't want to see that become commonplace. Is there some sort of control that either Chief Counsel Reynolds or Mr. Klinger can point out, or anybody else on the board has an idea of how we can make sure we have safeguards without restricting the good actors and coming up with a bad policy because we're afraid of another potential bad actor?
And one thing we could require is annual reporting of this to the board with those who are on 1 year and 2 year would be one way. President Miana?
I understand your – Marta Miana for the record. Regent Hayes, I understand your concern. However, in order to have this kind of flexibility, which is very useful to us on a number of levels, especially with clinical faculty and especially with Workday, which basically kicks someone out after 12 months and getting them reentered is really difficult, is I would certainly, in term, I'm just speaking for UNLV, be willing to raise the approval level from the dean level where it lives now to the VP level, if that would I'd be willing to consider that to allow us the flexibility of 24 months or even more.
Regent Hayes, anything to add?
You know, if the maker of the motion would be amenable to a friendly amendment of raising the approval level to the vice president level on this, that would be fantastic. Or would that need to, I guess we could ask counsel, can we make that amendment to this? Can I even make that amendment if it was accepted, or does that need to be at a subsequent hearing?
Well, there's a motion to approve it as provided. So you're asking for a revision? Yes.
Can I even ask for the maker of the motion?
Yes, because what happens is, assuming that it's approved with your friendly amendment, and we've done this before, then the person who drafted the policy would amend it physically before it gets codified to match what we can either do that, or you can ask for it to come back to review it. It's up to you as the maker of the motion.
I would like to ask the maker of the motion and the seconder.
All right, so could you just, for my benefit, repeat what the friendly amendment would be?
The friendly amendment would be that approvals of letters of appointment would, at the campus level, be by someone at the vice president level or higher.
If it's
longer than a year.
If
no, to 2 years.
I mean, we're changing this. If it's longer than a year, okay, I can do that. Yeah, if it's longer than a year.
All right, so just
to it is currently at the dean level, so if we just change it from the
so
dean.
So instead of the dean level, you're asking the maker of the motion to have something added that approvals of letters of appointment for 1 year or longer would require a vice president or higher to approve.
Correct.
Greater than 1 year.
Greater than 1 year.
Yes.
Okay.
And that's okay with the motion? And Regent Del Carlo is the second?
Okay. So that is now the motion as amended.
Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Before we go into the committee reports, I would like to thank Nevada State College, our host, President Tai Patterson, from the President's Office, Amber Lopez-Laster and Chris Schott, from Facilities Management, Rick Frisco and Amontes, from Marketing and Events, Danielle Welch, Linelda Raleigh, Melin Corzine, Information Technology, Brian Chantai, Production and Streaming Video, Rick Romero, Claudio, Danny, Mark, James, from SES Technical Support, Edwin, Tim, Gar, Ed, Cece, Brian, James, from Security, the UNLV Police Department, from Board Staff, Amanda Winner, Angela Carey, always doing great work and keeping everything moving, especially when I change my reservations. And last but not least, Michael Rushing and the Nevada State College Dining Services for terrific food both days. And with that, we will go to item number 24, Academic Research and Student Affairs Committee. Chair McAdoo.
I said I couldn't eat prime rib in 5 minutes. You know, what can I say? Okay, so the chair's report was emailed to all of us yesterday at 5:40 p.m. All of the action items on the agenda were approved as recommendations to bring before the full board for approval. Therefore, Mr. Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I move the approval of the committee recommendations and acceptance of this report, and this concludes my report.
I have a motion from Regent McAdoo. Do I have a second? Second, Regent Del Carlo. Any questions or comments? All in favor?
Great
signify.
Job, Kathy.
I thought you would like it.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item 24, Business, Finance, and Facilities. 25. God, I'm a number off. Business, Finance, Facilities Committee, Chair Hayes.
Thank you, and you don't need to blame a deity for your own error, but the Business Finance Facilities Committee met. We heard some stuff. You've read it. No, I'm kidding. the biggest item that would be a concern that we've heard about over the years were the houses in the Gateway Project. The committee agreed to approve the demolition of those if a contract has not been entered into by June 3rd, and the removal of those houses hasn't happened by a date in December. December 1st. Other than that, there were a couple other items related to real property in the medical district for UNLV, as well as a change to the Nevada State College housing project. As I said, you probably all reviewed these. I will note before I ask for approval that I abstained during that vote on items 5 or 6 and 7. It was a 5 and 6. Items 5 and 6. And there was a disclosure by Regent Carvalho, who would like to make her disclosure again before voting.
Thank you. Pursuant to NRS 281A and specifically 281A.420, I'm disclosing that I've known Cam Walker, principal of the Nevada State project, who's involved with the housing development project with the Nevada State, for over 15 years. I worked with Mr. Walker on a ballot question committee, and he has also been a customer at my business where we've discussed local politics, and he's endorsed me as a candidate, but we have not discussed the housing development project at Nevada State. Since my election as a regent, I have not engaged in any discussions with Mr. Walker, and I have no business relationship with him, nor have I received contributions or consideration. And my independent judgment is not affected by this relationship. Accordingly, I am disclosing the relationship, but will be voting on this matter.
Mr. Gould, if I ask for a motion to approve this entire thing with the caveat that I'm abstaining on certain numbers, or should we do two motions?
Regent Hayes, I would prefer that you do two motions.
Okay.
And that my understanding is that you are going to be abstaining from agenda items. I think it was 5, 6, and 7. Is that correct?
Well, 7 was just information.
Oh, so 5 and 6?
So 6.
Yeah, I would rather you do it in 2, so it's very clear that you did not vote on that one.
Okay, so first off, I'd like to request a motion to approve all of the agenda and actions of the committee other than items 5 and 6.
Motion from Regent Dubrava, second from Regent Del Carlo. Any questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay. Motion carries.
And on items number 5 and 6, as I've stated numerous times over the last 4 years, I own commercial land in the medical district, and I abstain from all discussions and votes on any other real property items in the medical district in Las Vegas. And I did so on these, and I will be doing so again. So if you guys would like to approve those items, I'm not going to ask for you to.
I have a motion for approval from Regent Dubrava, second from Regent Del Carlo. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, aye. Nay. Motion carries with one abstention. Not blaming God, I'll blame Trevor. Item 26, Audit Compliance and Title IX Committee. Chair Carter.
Thank you. In our meeting, we approved all the action items and accepted all the reports that were presented. We had an update from Misty Galicia on Title IX, which brought up the point that we had a letter that seemed to demonstrate that the system was advocating for a position on Title IX changes, and we've asked to kind of look into that and examine, because there was a letter. We'd not weighed in on that letter. We hadn't received the letter. There's a committee that covers Title IX, and we could have had discussions on it, and then we had plenty of time in between that open period where we could have discussed that. So we're just, at the very least, looking at what the policy is as far as the system advocating for a particular issue without the board's approval. On new business, we also had a request by Regent Michael to look at the UNR rifle team dissolution, specifically in its relation to Title IX, but also just maybe in general, and that may be an item that we'd want to carry to the general board instead of the audit committee. We are going to do some more Title IX training, requested by Del Carlo and Regent Hayes, and more interacting about Title IX issues on campus in future meetings. Mm-hmm. I move for approval and acceptance of the Audit Compliance and Title IX Committee report. Mr. Chairman, this concludes my report.
I have a motion. I have a second from Regent Hayes. Any questions or comments? Hearing none, all in favor?
I just have a question. I just have a question. How is it possible that the board took a position on an item with the Secretary of Education and the board had no idea about its position?
Well, that's a fantastic question. That's what we're looking into. It appears that on the system letterhead, a point from the system was issued to the Secretary of Education. That'll be a future agenda item that we're going to discuss further, but I don't think at this point, without it being agendized, it'd be appropriate to discuss it.
I would agree with that. I think at this point, the point was taken, and I think it needs to be put on a future agenda if it's going to be discussed.
We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, aye. Nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item 27, Health Sciences System Committee. Chair Dubrava.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. We had our Health Science Committee meeting, and we had an update from UNR School of Medicine. A highlight there is on March 16th, they are having their 50th anniversary Golden Gala. And we also got an update on the Physician Assistant Program. Seems to be doing well. They are receiving like 1,400 applications for 24 positions. And I think they're taking their second class this time. We also had an update from the UNLV School of Medicine. Dean Atkinson gave a report, and they are also going through their admissions process. They have over 1,900 applicants for their 60 spots, and 300 of those students have been interviewed.
We also heard an update about the rural education for medicine in Winnemucca. And we heard from Dr. Michael Gardner to give us an update on the UNLV School of Medicine practice plan. We then had a presentation by Dr. Joshua Baker about the UNLV Project Focus. And that is it's an amazing program that it was nice to hear about it. There's also a similar program at UNR, and this is a program for helping students with intellectual disabilities, or in the case of a presentation from Dr. John Rhodes and his wife Shelley, their son has Down syndrome and was the first to go through this program. So it was very nice to hear about that. As far as action items, the board action is requested to approve the following recommendation for approval of the Health Science System Committee: the minutes of the November 30th, 2018 meeting of the Health Science System Committee. Chair, I move approval of the committee recommendations and acceptance of this report. That concludes my report.
I have a motion for a second from Regent McAdoo. I am from Winnemucca, but I will be voting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Item 28, Security Committee, Chair Trachok.
Yes, everybody has before them a copy of the report from the inaugural Security Committee's meeting this morning. We had presentations on both cybersecurity and physical security. There were no action items, and I ask that this report be approved by the board.
I have a motion. Do I have a second? Second from Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, nay.
Aye.
Motion carries unanimously. Item number 29, Business Centers Update and Procedures and Guidelines Manual Revision, Nishi Payroll Services. There we go, CFO Klingon.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. This request comes to you on behalf of the ANCHI business officers. This is a request for an addition to the ANCHI procedures and guidelines memorializing the ANCHI payroll services. This formalizes the central function and provides a model for future shared services. This document defines the governance, the roles and responsibilities, as well as expectations, and also defines the metrics and the reporting requirements.
Thank you. Do I have a motion for approval?
So moved.
So moved from Regent Trachok, second from Regent McAdoo. Any questions or comments? Chair Page?
I just want to say we appreciate you coming back with this agenda item, and it's nice to see that the cost savings will go back to the campus, and we're hoping we'll see the same on other shared services to continue to look at some of these reports. So appreciate it. Thanks.
Regent Carter.
I did notice a couple institutions are going to have a fairly decent increase. I didn't know if there was a way to ramp that or if the presidents felt like that was something that they could absorb just in 1 year's change. Anybody has any thoughts?
Any presidents want to weigh in? No? President Miana?
Our business officer is very comfortable with this plan, and I think it's been collaboratively agreed upon, and everyone feels comfortable with it at this stage.
Any other? No? Huh? All right. We have a motion. We have a second. President Averitt.
Yeah, so Kristen Averitt for the record. And so we have reviewed some of this, and we do understand that there will be cost implications, but my understanding is that this is still somewhat flexible and that there are still discussions continuing. Am I correct? I think I'm correct on that in terms of how this is going to be implemented.
This is Andrew Klinger for the record. I think based on what is presented today is at least an estimate of what we think it's going to be. So I don't know that from a policy standpoint that there's going to be a change there, but you know the numbers may change given on depending on the actual allocation, but I think from a policy standpoint I think what's before you today is
right. Thank you for the clarification.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, aye. Nay. Motion carries unanimously. Item number 30, new business. Is there any new business? Regent Dubrava?
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. Offline, I had maybe mentioned to Chancellor Riley that I've seen in the paper recently, over the last year and a half, 2 years, of certain entities leaving Nevada Energy, and I had just asked, is it our responsibility to at least ask that question of NSHE, if that's even eligible to think about that maneuver? And I think Chancellor Riley mentioned that maybe at the June meeting this might be taken up.
Thank you. Regent McAdoo?
Yeah, you're going to want to hear what I have to say. I actually am requesting two new business agenda items for the April 12th special board meeting. The first one is I would like an item on the April 12th agenda to allow the board to discuss and take a position on AJR 5. The second one is to request on the April 12th agenda to allow the board to discuss and ensure the board's due diligence to the process of the periodic review for Chancellor Riley. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Hayes.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. With the chair's back, why are you leading the show?
He's
got his mouth full. Anyway, as we were talking earlier, and, based on Regent Del Carlo's comments, and I was referencing back to the 2000-2001 RAND study, I was wondering if we should consider, the state has changed significantly since we had a last commission a study to look at where we are as higher ed and what our holes and gaps are. I'm wondering if we should discuss at the next meeting if that is something we'd want to undertake, to commission an outside group to look at higher ed in Nevada, what holes and gaps we have, where we should grow, and kind of take a view, an overall view of that. So I'd be interested to have the board have a discussion. We may or may not decide to do it, but it would be nice to have that, maybe staff bring some recommendations on what costs of similar things have and what types of research we could do and what kind of information we could learn.
Okay. Any other new business? Regent Del Carlo.
Thank you, Vice Chair Geddes. I brought this up in our Title IX meeting yesterday to have some sexual harassment training. I think it would be really good if all the board had that too. And also this morning we had talked about cybersecurity, just some basic stuff, and we may look at wanting to add this to our onboard training that we have every 2 years when new regents come on board, like we do with the ethics stuff. So thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other new business, we'll go to public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
No public comment from Elko.
Is there any public comment around Regent Trachuk? In Reno?
A very long line, but I'm fighting them off. No public comment in Reno?
Is there any public comment here in Henderson? Hearing none, we are adjourned.